I'm Akron Ohio. This is episode 213 of On the Tropes. On this week's episode, we're going to talk about the movie La Jetée, and we'll get into why in a little bit. But first, as always, I'm your host, Nick. Today, I'm joined by...
Sir.
Eva.
And Guile.
We'll just do like a real quick recap because we realized that we haven't recorded since the Oscars happened. Parasite won, which is awesome. Bong Joon-ho won Best Director, which is awesome. He thanked... who he referred to as our Martin Scorsese, which is what I've been calling him recently. Like, I have a friend who I talk movies with, and every time he mentions Martin Scorsese, I correct him, our Martin Scorsese, because that's what Bong called him, and he got him a standing ovation, and it made me emotional.
I loved Martin Scorsese's reaction to it.
Yeah, and he's just
he
like,
could have easily been like one of those typical people in the audience when they get mentioned, they're like
politely clapping.
They're like awkward. They're like, yeah. But he like he does like the hands together and like is like so grateful, and then the whole audience
loses it.
He was
happy for him.
Yeah, he's like nobody.
Like,
is
he genuinely knows that Bong Joon-ho is a very good filmmaker.
It is actually a legit fact that Scorsese cares about other directors.
Yeah, like nobody loves movies more than Scorsese. I love movies. Nobody loves them like Scorsese. And that moment just made me like it made my heart warm. And it gave me hope that other good things could happen.
Hopes which were dashed
by Joaquin Phoenix
just today. While recording the last episode, I don't know if you noticed that my mood got sour, but it was seeing updates from the news. Anyways, the Joaquin Phoenix, he made a terrible speech. I hated that movie. Role was fine. He has been better in most of his other roles. Renee Zellweger gave the worst speech I've ever seen.
Who the fuck is Renee Zellweger? I had to say it.
I don't know. There was some other stuff, but
yeah, some other people won.
Mostly
a guy from Akron won.
Oh yeah, Matthew Cherry.
Yeah, shout out to that guy.
Life. Yeah,
man, what a great just project.
What'd you call it?
Great thing,
Matthew Cherry.
What'd you call the movie?
It's called Hair Love.
Hair Love.
Oh, Hair Love.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. Awesome. I haven't seen any of the shorts.
You haven't seen it? It's good.
Yeah, it's a tender story about a father and daughter and hair and acceptance.
Yeah.
He's a football player.
A children's story in the works.
Oh yeah, who?
I don't know.
No, we don't need to talk about it.
One of my favorite moments. Did anyone else watch it?
Nope.
None of you guys watched it?
I watched like five.
The
minutes
Oscars?
Of it.
Yeah.
No, I Twitter watch any event nowadays. I don't watch anything.
I took a nice nap
Twitter's
during it.
Jane Fonda, the way she read off, especially compared to like a couple years ago when Moonlight won, it made me reflect on Moonlight and how much the La La Land mess, like fuck up, really spoiled what should have been such a great moment for what I think was my third favorite movie of the decade, where this one felt more impactful, even though I like Moonlight slightly better than Parasite.
Because it's not the same.
Bong Joon-ho is a director that we have talked about for
years
since we've been doing the show before this show.
Yeah.
So that was cool. But it actually getting a real win instead of a clusterfuck like Moonlight had.
I still to this day feel like Twitter, I think that Twitter made that win happen.
So I remember
That it happened and we got so mad.
Because I remember watching that when Moonlight went. I was texting you, and Faye Dunaway called it for La La Land, and I shut the TV off, and I texted you. I was like, "Fuck this! I'm going to bed." And I went to bed.
And like, there's just like prominent black person, prominent activist, artist, just flipping out, and then all of a sudden, a split second later, they're like, "Whoa!" They're at the gates, like.
Yeah. Oh, what you think they made?
I really
they made.
That,
They willed it into
I think
existence.
That, yeah,
Moonlight happened.
I really think that. Yeah, no. That's my theory.
Yeah, but to be able to see it, like the moment, the way it should have been,
the way it should
where
have
you
been.
Get your name called, where you get to go up.
In the way she read it, if you haven't seen the clip, she takes an extra little pause.
Well, because she's confused, supposedly, right? Because it's
No. I'm talking about Jane Fonda.
Jane Fonda.
The way she read it, she takes just an extra beat. And the way she says Parasite, she sounds like she knows that what she's saying is like kind of a monumental moment in contemporary film history. Yeah.
Do you think she knows like how big it is for that movie?
Yeah. Oh, Jane Fonda knows. I definitely think she does. And Jane Fonda is 82. Looks great.
You know, and the thing is...
Well, that's what's really important.
I watched 12 Angry Men the other day. And, I mean, like, her dad may not have been... Like, he didn't get a chance to protest this major war quite the same way she did. Yet, like, that movie, for example, completely financed it himself.
Yeah.
Like, lost money on it.
Yeah, never she was raised a certain way.
Exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. She was raised with good values.
Yeah. So, I think she absolutely knew the significance of it. And
that's awesome.
Just her rating it, it's a really great moment just because, like, the way she delivers it is I think powerful. So it was a cool Oscars for once, and things have been bad since.
Was it a Parasite where there was like a mini controversy about them trying to turn the lights off on them too?
Like one person made a speech, they started to dim the lights, and
the crowd cheered.
Tom Hanks shouted, "Turn the lights back on," and then they're like,
"Well, Mr. Rogers said it."
Yeah. Fuck that movie. I'm not watching that movie. The documentary was enough, man. That documentary said everything.
I didn't see it. I've heard it's good. I'll check it out eventually. I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah.
So we are here to talk about La Jetée. Does anyone want to throw it to me as to?
So Nick, this was one of your contributions to the jar.
It was.
Would you like to tell us about why? What made you want to put it in there?
So La Jetée is, and has been for years, my favorite movie of all time. I think it's a great mix of what I like in movies. So people, if you haven't seen it, check it out. It's on YouTube or you can rent it from places. But it's kind of a nice mix where, like, it's technically an art house movie. And it has sort of an art house aesthetic, but I think it's incredibly accessible. Like, narratively, it's easy to get into. It's got a really simple story. It's short, so you can like you can follow along, you can jump in. It's got a great mix of like a dystopia. It's sort of a war movie. It's sort of a romance. It's got sci-fi elements. Like, it's about time travel. And it's got like a really good fatalistic tone and a tragic sort of a twist to it, without giving it away. I guess we'll give it away as we get further on in the discussion. But if people are just wanting a little taste, that's kind of what it is.
I'm still not sure. Like, people who listen to reviews like this, they know we're about to review this movie. Do you listen to reviews like this if you haven't seen it? Like, I feel like that's weird.
Some people just like don't care about spoilers.
I don't.
Like for our show, we are constantly reviewing things and we're always debating on whether we should spoil it or not. And it's like, it seems weird to tiptoe around significant moments to shield the sensitive
audience. Loath to go like too all in just because, you know, not that many people have seen it. Like, I'm sure a bunch of listeners haven't.
How did you get introduced to it? It's from 1962, which you weren't, I don't think you were alive then, so.
I was not, no. I think I'd first heard about it because there is another movie that was basically a remake of this. That I almost had, I don't know if I should even say that because it'll ruin one or both movies because they have kind of the same narrative arc. Whatever, I'll just say it. So I knew that it was based on 12 Monkeys. Monkeys
is based on that.
Or 12 Monkeys, the Terry Gilliam movie from the early 90s, which I almost had. I had it on my short list for last week's episode on Plagues. In that movie, instead of this is like a post World War III movie that is a post like bioterrorism movie. But other than that, like the like bigger picture is the same. So I knew it was based on that, and that was a movie I really liked. And then it showed up on the BFI Sight and Sound top
50.
Top, yeah. It was number 50. So I was trying to watch all of them, and I saw that this one, I was like, oh, I remember hearing about that. Oh, it's only 28 minutes long. I'll check it out. So I checked it out. And the first time I saw it, I was like, oh, that was a cool movie. I liked it. It wasn't until after watching it a couple times that it kind of rocketed up my all-time list. And now, I mean, I've seen this movie like probably 20 times. We should probably talk about the style of it, because the style of it's the most jarring thing.
What do they call it? A photo...
A photo montage or a photo essay or something like that.
Monet or... There's a fancy French term for what it is.
Yeah, they call it photo montage, and then he called it a photo novel, which I don't even know what that means. But basically, what he did was he was a documentarian and a writer and a poet and an activist, but he was also a photographer. So while he was making a different documentary, he started shooting this, and he just used a Pentax Spotmatic camera, like a camera, not a video camera, but a camera.
Yeah.
Took pictures and started building the pictures for what would become this. So the movie is told almost like a PowerPoint, where it's...
Slideshow.
Yeah, it's all still photos except one brief moment that's actually video.
Yeah, there are a couple moments in the movie where they do that Ken Burns like
pan. Yeah, the very first shot is a Ken Burns,
and then they do it later on for one building shot, and I'm like, why? Like, that's the only time that they do it, and I'm like, what is significant? Like, why don't they just frame that shot how they wanted it? Like, I don't know why they needed to have a weird pan in it. But
I think the style is really interesting. It's got that washed out kind of, it's like that gritty,
the very grainy
era. Yeah. Like
there is really a very, in the way it's projected, it's like, there is a little bit of like movement to it, even though it's not moving.
A lot of grays and blacks.
Yeah.
The actual each frame or the cuts between
just
frames?
The frames and how it's like, you can tell it's like, the version we're watching, which is the DVD, or it's not a Blu-ray, is it?
It's a Blu-ray.
It's a Blu-ray. But it's like it's like a projected version of the negative. So like, it's like there's like a little bit of a...
It's not totally still.
Yeah, there's like a little bit of a stutter to it. Like you're watching it in a theater or something, and it makes it a little more like...
Dynamic.
Yeah, a little
than
bit.
Than if it was just a PowerPoint.
Yeah. But it, I don't know. I don't know, like, we don't want to review a ton of things on the show. Do you like want to talk about like what the movie is about, or
well, didn't last time you just ask everybody questions about it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, like, yeah. Or we could do that too.
I'm ready to answer.
Well, I think you should ask us questions about it.
I have to ask you questions.
That's how it went last time.
Issue number one.
So I watched this last night with Lisa, got her thoughts on it, and then I watched it again today. Last night I watched it in English with subtitles, and then I watched it today with the French with subtitles, which I think the French with subtitles isn't a ton better, but it is a lot better. Have you like noticed any...
Some of the language is a little bit different,
and
some of the lines are better.
Like it doesn't come across as like a translation thing. Like, I don't know why. Like the first thing that stood out to me was early on, after he sees the body fall, and they say like in the English spoken language version, they say, and then Paris was blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Like very on the nose, blunt, and like not poetic at all. But then in the French version, they say something like,
"In some time after
the destruction of you see the destruction of Paris," and like that's so much like more beautiful sounding, which kind of goes, it goes with this like the overall feeling of the movie way better than, and then Paris blew up, like. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah,
there's I have the French version pulled up here, and I like the English line reading of this better. Let me.
So you watched it in French? That reminds me of when I was watching Scarface in different.
Didn't you watch Apocalypse languages. Now in French?
Also? Yeah, yeah.
The why? Only
why.
It was there.
It was, yeah, a few different reasons.
The only other movie that I did this for was the Samurai Batman movie. And I was like blown away by that too, because like the Japanese with the subtitles, there was like so much
it's
cooler.
Usually a little bit more it's, accurate. Yeah, I noticed that with I mean, there's one dub that I'm thinking of. The Fantastic Planet actually does have a really good English dub, yet there are changes within the
yeah. But those are like the like that, and then they refer to them as timeless animals in the museum in the French version, and they refer to them as ageless in the English. And the theme of time in this movie is like super prevalent.
Yeah,
I think that's.
Let me just pull out a quote. This is from an article from the Vinyl District, and the writer says. Don't denigrate the English version as a sop to the anti-intellectual brigade. Both are mandatory. And in Criterion Collection's DVD Blu-ray contains both for this and Sans Soleil, which is the other movie on here.
I think,
so if I could just read the two versions of my favorite quote from the movie, because I do think the movie's a lot about time and how we navigate that. It's also a lot about... trauma,
especially one character having an idea of the time that he's in and like the plan that he has and having that kind of affect this other character.
So there's a Medium article that's all about how this is kind of a reflection on trauma, and I'm going to read, this is the French quote, which is, nothing sorts out memories from ordinary moments. Later on, they do claim remembrance when they show their scars. And I actually like the English version better, which is, nothing tells memories from ordinary moments. Only afterwards do they claim remembrance on account of their scars. And I just like the way that's phrased. It's a little bit more like poetic to me. But I think that quote, or that concept either way, of memory just being a scar is something that I love from this movie. And that's kind of what the movie's about, how this memory that he has of being on the jetty when he was a kid and seeing something tragic and seeing this woman are what kind of he kept with him through the war. And it's what allowed him to be able to time travel, because it gave him like an anchor to the past. And ultimately, it's kind of his downfall. But I just love that concept so much.
I love the line, time builds itself painlessly around them.
Is that when they're in the museum?
I think it was like when he first meets her, actually. Okay. They are actually connecting. But just what's tough about a movie like this is, so since it's all images, it's not the prettiest thing ever, or even it's not descriptive visually or narratively in a way, because it's such a short movie. So they need to, like, lines like that, they lend a lot of, like, they help out a lot, because it's the movie feels a little like slow to me, but also nothing is really explained very well, so there's like a constant back and forth of like, I'm really getting into it, but I also like want to know more, but also it's slow, and like I don't know, like I keep going back and forth of how I really feel about this movie, honestly, despite having seen it now maybe 4 or 5 times. But I kind of want to know what Eva thinks, though, because she's being a little quiet.
I was thinking, aren't all films
a series of still images?
Yeah. I mean, that's.
But this movie is honestly like nothing. I mean, I know that the picture movie of stills isn't something new, but this one has definitely risen to the top. But it's also just not like anything I've ever seen before, where people get excited when a character blinks mm-hmm. on screen.
Yeah.
And they're like,
and I love that sequence. Not just because of that, but the way it's what leads up to that is a series of quickly dissolving cuts. It's a, like a girl laying in bed and they're
dreamlike.
Yeah, they're she's laying with her eyes closed, and there's a series of I tried to count the last time I watched it, and I think it's 11 or 12 dissolved photos that are kind of cutting relatively quickly to give it gives almost the illusion of movement. It almost looks like a video instead of just still photos. Mm-hmm. And then she actually like opens her eyes and looks at the camera.
Yeah.
Which is like one of my favorite things in any movie. This is from the Criterion booklet. There's like an essay in there, and it says, "It is certainly not the only film to be composed out of still images, mm-hmm. but its triumph is to harness them using the classic grammar of the narrative fiction film to the ultimate spare, stripped-down storyline, a mere 27 minutes in length." So I haven't seen any other movies that are told in this style, but I'm sure other like experimental filmmakers have tried to do this. We tried to do this, and it felt longer than
27
it,
minutes.
It did.
It's 20. It's 28 minutes.
Oh, well, yeah, nevertheless, exactly. It felt longer than 28 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, so we did attempt.
We shot most of a short that was going to be in this style, and I tried editing it multiple times, and I couldn't get it to work. We also needed to reshoot some things with somebody who we can't shoot with it. Complicated.
Yeah.
Somebody who's no longer dating somebody.
A lost actor.
But it was really hard to edit together. I've literally watched this movie silent because I wanted to get an idea of like how is he able to get these things to flow in a way that still feels cinematic, and I couldn't do it. And I don't know if it's because he did it on actual film, like he did it with an actual reel of film, and we're doing it in iMovie or what.
I think it's that he took it on the pictures on film. Mm-hmm. And then I also kind of think it's the combination of the narration and the score.
So I was going to say the other thing is the sound in this movie is,
don't say it's incredible.
Oh, I think it's,
well, some of it's like good, but it adds a little texture to it, but it's also very sparse. Like,
yeah. Well, it's supposed to be sparse, but it sounds very, like it's almost rhythmic. Like there's a rhythmic nature to the heartbeat and the footsteps.
Yeah, the bird stirring the sleeping.
The bird scene.
Yeah.
I can't tell if you guys are being sarcastic or not. But yeah, I think Trevor
Is it
Duncan.
Flipping? Was that what they were calling it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know what you guys were talking about.
Trevor Duncan did the soundtrack, and it's really good. I was going to say, it's a really amazing portrayal of an apocalypse at the beginning, where it was like quiet, but also like beautiful, but also kind of haunting.
Well, and in the like traditional meaning of the word, which is to reveal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. There's definitely a major revelation.
I like the line, "The victors stood guard over an empire of rats."
How did I miss that?
It's like right in the beginning after when they talk about
how the winners and not the winners.
Paris has basically been moved underground. And one of the other things that the last couple times I watched this, I tried to keep the mindset of like, this is Paris 1962. So it's less than two decades after World War II.
It's an interesting way to look at it.
So you have like,
it's similar to that time.
What do you mean? I don't get it.
Well, go ahead.
So it's like not long after World War II ended. So I think that the line of sometime, like one of the first lines of the movie is sometime after the outbreak, or they're at the jetty just before the outbreak of World War III.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in Paris and it's only been 15 years since World War II ended, hearing that has to be like really jarring and upsetting. So I think starting off a movie that way is like a great way to like get people's ears to perk up.
Yeah. Have you seen Hiroshima Mon Amour?
I have not. But so that was directed by Elaine Renée. And I was reading a little bit more on Chris Marker recently just in prep for this. And apparently, A, he and Renee were friends, and B, he helped edit Night and Fog.
Mm. One of my other favorites.
Yeah, Chris Marker's a really interesting dude. As far as I know, this is his only narrative movie. So he did a bunch of documentaries.
Did he? What did he end up doing with 12 Monkeys? He wrote the screenplay? Or
no. 12 Monkeys is just based on this. He didn't have anything to do with it.
Okay. I wasn't sure, like, if they... Was it just, it was like 20 something years later? When did
What year did 12 Monkeys come out?
Was it 90?
Like 92 or 93. About 30 years.
30 years, okay. I was like, I wasn't sure if it was one of those things where like he helped out or oversaw something. Cause
I don't think so.
Because Gilliam, like, he for sure like talks about La Jetée as like...
Oh, yeah. I mean,
he didn't tiptoe around it.
No. They had to buy the rights. I think they had to buy the rights to it.
Wow. As far as the editing goes, I've seen actually Terry Gilliam say like how it's like a masterpiece as far as editing goes. There's certain things about it that stood out to me in a negative way is like the movie's made out of pictures, and I think it was during the early parts where they're in the galleries or whatever. Mm-hmm. They like reuse pictures, and I don't know why that stood out to me, like, as sort of a cheap kind of like student film quality to me, where like we don't have another picture of this guy's face. We need to like just reuse the same one.
I've never noticed that it's literally the same picture
I'm pretty sure it's like the same picture, and like I mean maybe it isn't, and maybe it's just like strikingly similar, but stuff like that. I was just like, I don't know. Like, I know that like a lot of this movie takes place in dreams and memories. So
smiles and fries.
There is like when he's with this mysterious girl, they don't pull the camera out ever. Like, it's very claustrophobic, very just personal. The two of them, not every shot is like very the most pretty shot ever, but the narration talks about the places that they're at, and you can't visually you can't see that at all. And there are some times when I'm like, kind of like to see this, but it's hard to tell. Like the movie, since the movie takes place in a space that it is so out there, like scientifically, it's hard to fault why it is kind of gross looking, but
it's supposed to be disorienting in a way, because the protagonist
but the narrator will describe things. Like, there's one part where he's like, she was far away from me, and then I closed my eyes and she was closer to me, or something like that, and like they don't show that ever. And I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's done purposeful, because the movie talks about how disorienting it is to travel through time. Yeah. And that's why he's the only one who's been able to do it successfully, is because the other people who've done it have either died or gone crazy because they find it so jarring. And even when he does it, it sounds like he has trouble.
Yeah.
You do wonder that. How many people were subject to this plan before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, they say that, like, this has been something that tons of people have, you know, gone through, and they...
Yet there's only died a week or for the character to have come up with it, though.
Huh?
There's only 1 week for the character to have come up with it, though.
Hmm.
1 week?
Wait, which movie are you talking about, Nick?
La Jetée.
Oh! We watched Training Day.
Sir, what'd you think of La Jetée?
Hey. I hate you and I don't like you.
I want to know what they think. And I want to hear you like rip this movie apart. I don't want you to be all tiptoe around whether you think it's a good movie or not.
Training Day, it's a great movie.
No, Training Day is not a great movie.
Training Day is a wonderful film.
Training Day is not a good
movie. It's a great movie.
No, Training Day is...
It's a great movie.
It's not.
It just depends.
Nick is so disappointed in us.
Yes, there's an ambiguous audience for Training Day. Yeah, it's a great film about police corruption. It just depends on who the audience is.
Yeah, I don't like it.
So neither of you guys liked
it? So you guys didn't actually watch it? Or?
Well, I've seen it. I have actually seen it.
Yeah, I watched it.
I watched it too.
I need to shake my head at you guys.
Well, the format was different than we thought it would be. I thought it was going to be like the last time where you just kind of did a round robin of answering questions. Then it would have been a lot funnier because then we would have been answering.
That was for the round table, not for the...
Oh, yeah, don't start the this shit. Don't try to save this. Table.
Don't, no. So our gag was kind of derailed.
Seriously.
it's like the snail joke. What the fuck's your problem?
It's exactly like the snail.
It's like my potato joke from last week. Sir, what did you think of
of La Jetée, the French film? I guess I think it's not a science fiction film. It's a fantasy film because under our current understandings, science fiction is impossible. I think it's a lot better than 12 Monkeys. It's a lot better than anything that's been copied from it. I feel like it. I have a hard time with time travel movies just because of that. Like, just knowing how...
Disorientation?
Yeah, or? Just knowing how impossible it generally is. It makes it harder for me to really get into it. And then I felt like... I do think the movie is compelling. Like, I like the necklace he has. Like, there are certain... Like, there's these characteristics that he has from the future. Like, his war necklace.
Weird explain like to
that.
Her.
I actually don't like the... I don't like the twist ending. And that's one of the things that bugs me, because it's impossible. Like, even within the possibilities that people have that time travel could exist, which is, like,
yeah,
very few and far between, because you can't carry your mass back in time. This is the main problem.
Talking about, like, the multiverse versus time travel.
The idea that he's watching an image of himself getting murdered... It's totally impossible. It's like, that's
that,
not...
Yeah, that does, I mean, that's the sort of thing that doesn't bother me because I've already bought into we're time traveling. So I'm not going to go like one it step further me, and go... Yeah. It's the same, like with any time travel movie, no matter what, I kind of just go... I use like the looper logic, which is we could argue about it back and forth all day and we'll all just get headaches. So let's not. Yeah, and that's kind of my approach to
that one. That was like the most far. Yeah, it's because it takes me out of it. Like, I remember thinking that when I first saw it as a kid, like, well, if he's there's a lot that you have to like, so there's a lot of suspension of disbelief there.
It doesn't...
I did notice today though that I had remembered it as only having one scene of movement. Mm-hmm. And there's a brief moment where you just are watching her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And she's, I think they're like in the bed.
Yeah. She blinks. Yeah. That's cool. And then when she says, King Kong ain't got shit on me.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. Yep.
I believe that was ad libbed.
I believe it was ad libbed.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. That's
Oscar winning performance. You can't agree that
he's still disappointed.
No, Day is much better than 12 Monkeys.
I like 12 Monkeys. I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it in probably 20 years.
I mean, the thing about Training Day is, it's the best neo-noir film we have. Think about how close it is to, like, the actual noir films, like Touch of Evil, things like that.
I'll give it this. I do like Denzel in that movie, but we all know that Oscar is a belated Malcolm X Oscar.
True.
Which I just watched for the first time last week.
Nice.
And I have to say, it's from 1993, so it's almost 30 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Still rules.
No, it still rules. And I mean, one thing.
Where
about,
have you been?
I don't. It's fucking long.
It's really long.
Wait.
This is a sore subject for me, actually.
Well, okay.
I had time in a college class about
movie?
How long Malcolm
I'll
is.
Say
3 hours
much,
and 20 minutes.
How are you saying it's too long?
You yeah, watched I The will. Irishman and said you wanted several more hours of that movie.
I would have watched more hours of Malcolm X, too.
I would have watched more hours of Malcolm X. It's Spike Lee's like greatest performance.
I still like him better in Do the Right Thing.
I hear that. That's fair.
But Angela.
It also has Tuco in it. Training Day.
Oh.
Some trippy ass shit, Holmes.
Well,
got Tuco.
I'm going to one up you. Malcolm X has Gus Fring in it.
It's true.
So.
Oh, yeah. I'm not debating whether or not Malcolm X is a better one.
So what you're saying is Training Day is better than Malcolm X.
I mean, it's interesting, though, because as an anti-police film, it really, like, the fact that it's this black character in this neighborhood, like, and he's harming the people who are closest to him that look like him, that, like, that's really, there's a lot of post-colonial theory in that.
I get that.
Him being this almost kind of a modern-day driver or corrupt chief.
I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it's too much. It's very unsubtle. In a way,
yeah, he becomes by the end of the film. He's almost like a Freddy Krueger kind of indestructible, unstoppable character. Last
15, 20 minutes just goes off the rails. Like when he gets shot by the Russians, it's just so over the top.
Yeah.
What'd you think of L'Ajouté, Eva?
To me, I feel like all films are a series of still images, and so what's special about this one? They're
literally that.
Yeah. So what's special about this one? That there's more blank spaces in between the ones that we're shown, that we don't see the motion of one to the other?
Yeah.
I mean,
that makes it more important or more notable?
But your brain registers 24 frames per second or 30 frames per second differently than this, which is not literally one frame per second, but it creates the illusion of...
And it's also like how we remember things. Like we don't remember things in like video or it's like a weird thing to talk about.
I know, I get what you're saying actually.
In motion, I guess that part actually. We remember them. Yeah. And that's all this movie is about.
That's what I
like. I don't think this movie could be in.
To me, it would be like Hiroshima. Right. It would be like Hiroshima Mon Amour.
So that you just hit on like the thing that I appreciate the most about this movie is how the form and the message of the movie kind of intermingle so well, because you're right. If it was told where it's just like a guy walking down the street and then he gets captured and then he goes in this thing and they show him writhing in pain, I mean, it might be interesting.
Yeah.
But the fact that it's all about how memory is scarring and how important those scars can be and how they can damn us and how they can, you know, lead to our entire lives being altered, that being told in photographs, which are only there to be remembered, I think it's just perfect.
Here's the other tension between that is that a photograph is an objective object, at least to the point we're not going to talk about something being manipulated or edited. We're going to talk about like a photograph on film.
That we know it's real.
This is a thing. This is a physical document of the way things looked at a particular moment in time. Mm-hmm. A memory is not that. A memory is always subject to changing interpretation, limited to your capacity to remember.
Yeah.
Your and perspective.
It's the opposite of a photograph because it exists only within your head.
And right, but there's
literally no other way to portray that.
Show that on screen.
How else would you show that?
That's the closest way that they, I get that.
Yeah. What I want to ask you, Nick, is you were saying how you watched this for the first time and you thought it was cool, but it wasn't like life-changing or whatever, how you described this movie. And then you also said in your early... talk about this movie is that it's like a really approachable and most people will like, you didn't say most people, but you said something along the lines of like,
it's not scary. It's like, if you heard it's a French art house, black and white movie, like avant-garde from 50 years ago. I mean, I think it's a fun movie. Like, it's entertaining.
Yeah.
I find it entertaining.
Approachable. I think approachable, as you said. Yeah.
It's compelling once you get into it. Mm-hmm. But
do you think movies it's way require, more... Do you think this movie requires multiple viewings, and is that something that
it doesn't require it? But I think you get more out of more out of any movie if you watch it more often. And this being 28 minutes long has allowed me to watch it tons of times.
I gotta say though, I think that's a lot of it is that it is 28 minutes. Mm-hmm. If it was any longer or any like, it would not be great.
You're not. I mean, I agree.
I think that like, I think for me that's always been the best thing that I can say for it, which actually is a lot, because I think that's the goal. I've always been a fan of shorter film.
It's the right length.
If you can say what you need to say, it's just like poetry. Yeah. If you can say what you need to say with the fewest amount of words, mm-hmm. then you're ahead.
Yeah.
You know?
I think
it's very concentrated.
The perfectly right length. Mm-hmm. And not enough people try to do, I mean, lots of people make short movies, but
they're usually not a half hour. Like that's kind of a
right.
It's almost like the novella.
And most of them aren't this ambitious. Like they don't have that much going on mm-hmm. in their heads. Like if you look at the Oscar, I mean, I haven't watched them for the last couple of years because I got so sick of them. If you look at the Oscar movies that are nominated for short film, they take one subject and like one social cause, and they go after it in the most like
ham-fisted.
Oh God, yes.
That it was the High Arts Festival. Oh my God.
Was it just like that?
It was like, and it's become to a point where people know mm-hmm. that, oh, I've got a short film competition coming up, so I'm going to think of whatever,
find me some poor kids.
You know, whatever cause.
I'm talking smack about somebody, however. I don't work in the theater anymore, so I can say this. Like, the one that won, I think, not this past year, the year before, it was literally just, you could tell a guy that thought, okay, well, I'll have a tragedy, and it's like some woman's boyfriend dying of some random, like, cancer or something like that. And it's like... It's so devoid of personal experience or like real weight or reality. It's just like you're just watching this person like cry on screen and have this loss. And it's like it just is so clearly an award grab.
Yep. Yeah. And that's like something I reject. Whereas this, like, it sounds like an art house movie, but I think it's if you look at. Like, I was kind of, like, pushed into watching it after seeing that it was on the Sight and Sound list. And if you look at a lot of those other movies, I mean, something as popular as 2001 A Space Odyssey is on that list. This is way more accessible than that. If you want to talk about, like, popular sci-fi movies, that's a very, like, difficult movie to get into.
Yeah, for classic, like, art house stuff. Lajete is actually, is one of the more accessible things.
Are you talking about, like, literally watching, like, sitting down for 28 minutes?
Or compared to, like, 3 hours? Like,
getting the movie, because...
Oh, no, just, like, how is it to watch
My big take of this movie is I was both, like, overwhelmed by it, but also kind of bored at the same... Like, bored at parts throughout this movie, and so, like, I don't, it's such a strange combination of, like, when you were describing the genres that it is, like, it's romantic, but you don't know anything about these characters. They don't have names or anything.
Right.
And then it's a sci-fi movie. It's an apocalypse movie. It's got, tragic moments. It's got, like, other
it's
things
very
in
French.
It. Yeah. And it's got all these things on it, but it doesn't, and then it also has, like, these really quiet, like, moments where you're just watching stills for, like, 30 seconds. Yeah. And I don't know, like...
But if you compare that to something like 2001...
But then it's also, like, 20 minutes, and you're... Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I say that as someone who's never seen 2001, so...
All right. Yeah, 2001 is, like, 28 minutes into that movie. I think you're, like...
I still haven't seen it.
I've never seen it all the way through.
Okay. Have you tried watching it? It's incredible. Yeah. I love it. It's incredibly slow.
Yeah, it is. And it's just the thing where I feel like... I think it sounds like you really enjoy it. I think for the most... It's a product of its time. I feel like for a lot of it, like, you had to be there. And by there, maybe I just mean in a theater. Like, you have to have dedicated yourself to, this is an experience. I am going to a specific place.
It's not something you would want to watch
on
your
there's
phone.
A lot of... Well, I think about never. Like some of that stuff too is like, well, we're like back in high school and I was trying to watch these movies, like when you mentioned you were trying to watch the Sight and Sound films, there were certain things that I was going to sit through no matter what, just because I wanted to get the complete you know, experience. I needed to watch every 70s crime drama. I didn't want to watch Big Bad Mama. I watched it anyway though. Like
yet. I think now it's kind of like it's past me, you know, like I don't know that I care about
yeah it. I don't to feel like 2001
I now. I think that's the biggest obstacle of movies like this that are considered these classics. It's yeah. like, well, what's the relevance to seeing it now? I do think that I think I like La Jetée because for one it is I just like that concentrated nature of it. You get to the end of that thing, whether you like the twist or not, whether you like what happened, it's wrapped up.
It's,
you
have yeah, this like it's,
total package. And that's really not easy to do.
It's not. And like we were saying, it's short. I watched it the other night. Like as I was normally, I'd be like, all right, I'm going to like put on something before I go to sleep. And I'll watch like an episode of lately. I've been rewatching Futurama and I'll watch an episode that I've seen a few times before and then go to sleep. I could do the same thing with this. I can't do that with There Will Be Blood. I can't do that with The Godfather.
Well, so that brings up an interesting thing. I mean, I tend to watch longer movies like that I've seen a bunch of times just because I know I'm going to fall asleep at some point.
See, I fall asleep to TV shows. I have trouble doing that in movies. I like get too sucked into too, them.
Yeah. Another thing with this movie is I think the narration's a little, I want to say floofy, but it's like a little
it's poetic.
And it's not something... I don't want to say that it reminds me of something like Dawson's Creek when people always say like no one talks like that in that show. No, and it kind of reminds me of that where like it is like really like smart and like what they're saying is really intelligent, but like it's something that like I'll listen to and I have to like I'm reading like if it's a subtitle I'm like reading
it's
it
almost but then hard also to
like I'm trying to kind of put it together in my own head while I'm reading it and then
well you mentioned earlier the
that's
the
why
English version versus the French version. I think that's what, like for me I need to see it
written down.
Well even the English version I watched subtitled because
I can see that feeling with the English version, whereas in the French version, I don't know that I noticed.
Like, and that's sort of one of those things that like maybe I get more out of like the dialogue. It's not that complicated, but
there's certain lines where it
that I think
that I feel like should be impactful or should have like bigger meaning, and then I'm like I sit on them for even just like a few seconds, and then something is already happening, and I'm like kind of. It's gone.
Well, it's different than like most movies. The dialogue is people either speaking to each other or a narrator, but they're not usually narrating. This is more, I mean, the language is poetic, but it's more like a third person narrator in a book.
Yeah.
And we don't really see that often to this extent in a lot of movies. Like Age of Innocence sort of does it, but a lot of times the narration is like,
it's a person. It's
Double Indemnity, where they're telling a story, but it's not as
pervasive.
Yeah.
It's not the third person. It's really
interesting. Yeah. So the way it's told in lots of different ways, I think, is not totally unique, but maybe it's slightly unusual.
It's classic for sure.
Yeah,
it's definitely deserved of that.
One other thing I want to point out, and then we can start wrapping up, but. Did you guys catch the reference when he says this is where I come from and he points to like the tree
the rings on the tree
and he points to outside. Do you guys know what movie looking at the tree trunk is a reference to?
Vertigo.
Yeah. It's, did you watch the bonus features or are you?
No, I watched some person analyzing it.
Okay.
Referenced Vertigo a lot, actually.
Yeah. Vertigo is fantastic. So Vertigo's, I think, from 1955 or 56. So not that long before this. And it kind of like came and went and it didn't really become a popular movie of Hitchcock's until the last like 20 years or so.
But it inspired the crap out of, what's his name? The guy who wrote, or
Chris Marker. Yeah. So he like was obsessed with it.
Yeah.
And he put it in this, and then he put it in Sans Soleil, which is the other movie on this Criterion DVD, and that's a movie I talked about it on our documentary episode. That was that other movie on this disc is my favorite documentary of all time. That's a movie where the dialogue in that sometimes is really challenging to follow because it's so like that language is so flowery. and it's so like sometimes obscure, and he's dealing with really complex topics that I'm like, wait, I have to like rewind and figure out what the fuck you just said.
I almost thought about watching that last night too, and then starting my review thinking that I was going to be a review. We were
reviewing. You almost did the same thing.
Yeah.
It was going around.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really good movie too. But anyways, so.
Quick shout out. So listeners, if you want to hear how and why time travel is so impossible, I've been listening to this great YouTube channel. There's this guy. He's in Ohio somewhere. I can't remember which city it is. It's like hours from here. I think it's like central Ohio. He's like a trained physicist, and he covers all of these like sci-fi like concepts. Tropes and concepts. It's called, his channel is Isaac Arthur. It's the name of the guy. So just Isaac Arthur. It's an episode of time travel. It's got me thinking that one viable method of time travel would be to transfer our consciousness through time. Yeah.
Maybe that's what he did.
That has some scary implications. Like imagine like going back in the time way. To get into your body. Like in, that would be like, that's like, do you have to shunt your that was existing like, consciousness or like what?
Did you read the Wrinkle in Time books? Did you read any of Madeline Lingle's books?
You know, I read like the first one as like a little kid.
Yeah. And so one of the sequels,
like just the first half of it.
Yeah. One of the sequels to that. It was one of my favorites when I was in like fourth grade. I just loved it. And then I read it like, I think I picked it up when I was like 18 or 19 and I read it again and I was like, yeesh, this is problematic. But it did time travel like that, where the youngest boy in the story, he's capable of this kind of like extrasensory, where he can it's like astral projection.
Yeah.
He can see what other people are looking at, but he can do it through time. So he goes back in time, and he can't really steer what the person is doing, but he is seeing it from that person's perspective, and he can kind of experience these things that are happening. But he doesn't. He stays in one physical space, and he just moves backward in time into other people.
Right.
So to wrap up, Largete, would you recommend it, sir?
I would recommend Training Day to anyone. As well as the short film Largete.
Thank you.
Eva? Yes.
I mean, since I don't honestly think that this movie's like for me, maybe. I don't know. Like it's difficult to say, just because I always put movies, like very special movies, are ones that like stick with me like far after I've finished watching them. I don't know if this one has that staying power. I do admire this movie for a lot that it does, but I don't think that it I don't know. Yeah, I think it might just be how I view movies, as far as like with that cinematography background and not an intelligent background, I guess. But I did like the movie, but I don't think that it is for everyone.
That's fair.
So
I just think that even if it's not for everyone, it's a much shorter not for everyone.
It is.
It's definitely. Yeah.
It's not 2 hours and 40 minutes of a horse walking in the wind.
Would you recommend a 28-minute cockfighter movie, Nick?
I would.
Nick will do anything for less than half an hour at a time. Yeah.
So, is it time to?
Yeah, it's time to. The raptor claw. I think you should use the raptor claw.
I really wanted
not using the claw.
I really wanted to add another movie, but it went in a paper round. And
so.
What's next?
Eva looks either frustrated or
delighted. Oh, I am incredibly pleased.
It's terse.
It is one of mine.
What do
we got here?
It is. No Holds Barred.
No!
That just says Holds Barred.
Holds Barred.
Okay.
Ah.
All right. Nice. I've had your copy of it for quite a long time.
Over a year.
So.
It's Dookie!
So we will watch that shortly, and I believe it's like rentable anywhere.
I think it's a lot easier to find than it has been for the first 30 years of my life.
Yeah. Let me
or at least like not the first 30. So like age like 4 to 31.
If this is correct, if Letterboxd is correct, it's streaming on Hulu and Prime.
Nice.
So it's fucking everywhere. You guys,
Hulu has everything, man.
Before we leave, final round. of X meets Y.
Jesus Christ.
This is called Die Hard on an X.
Is this more...
Yeah, it's all... I looked at the first one. I think we're going to be able to nail these. So it's Die Hard on a blank. X meets Y. Die Hard on a bus.
Speed.
Speed.
The bus that wouldn't slow down.
Thank you. You know, Nelly once asked me, what is the name of the movie...
Where the bus would slow down.
Keanu's on a bus. And I was like, I have the perfect thing for this. So I went to frankieact.com, which is the best site on the internet, and I found a screen cap of that. I think it was called The Bus That Couldn't Slow Down. The fucking best.
After you're done doing this quiz, you need to send it to me, because Dave's favorite movie is Die Hard.
Surely. Die Hard in a Tunnel. Daybreak. I think it's Daybreak with Sly Stallone.
Daylight. Shit.
Mm.
Die Hard on a Mountain.
The Cliffhanger.
Die Hard in the White House.
The
White House Down? Down. Is that what it's called?
Phoenix Down.
Oh, Olympus Has Fallen.
Oh.
Yeah.
Die Hard in a White House 2.
Olympus Has Fallen 2.
White House Down. There we go. Die Hard in a Mall.
Chopping Mall.
Paul Blart Mall Cop.
No, I like mine better.
Yeah, that is true. He does crawl on a grate.
Or does he?
Whatever.
I'll take your word for it. Die Hard on a Boat. Speed 2 Cruise Control, probably.
Probably not. Or Under Siege.
No. What was the thing?
Oh, I got it. It was Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Oh,
I said
that. Under Siege?
No. What was the thing we watched with the dolphin?
The Day of the Dolphin.
Day of the Dolphin.
Is that in the jar?
Not that I know of.
Dolphin's Tale?
Add it. That's a Buck Henry one. I've never seen it.
It's going in.
It's something.
I need to add a movie
too. Who was it that really liked it that I was talking to?
Roy. Listener.
I think I talked to.
Listener Roy really liked it.
Oh, I know. I can't say who. I don't want to, flag their real name on here yet. I think I remember who it is.
It's Barack Obama, folks. Die Hard on This Other Boat.
Maybe Chris Horn, maybe?
That definitely got picked up. Die Hard on The Other Boat is Under Siege.
Well, he's a public figure. Chris Horn, if you're listening, were you the person that said they like Day of the Dolphin?
Well, I'll smooth it out.
If not, we're going to get sued for fucking libel.
Don't you ever say I love that movie. No more.
Die Hard in a rink? Like a skating rink?
I don't know.
What's the new biopic that came out?
Blades of Glory?
No.
I, Tonya? No, Sudden Death? Die Hard on a Train? Under Siege 2. Die Hard in a Plane. Snakes on a Plane.
Snakes on a Plane.
Passenger 57.
Ah, yes.
Always bet on black.
Die Hard in Another Plane.
Passenger 58.
Executive Decision. Die Hard in the President's Plane.
Air Force One.
Mm-hmm. Die Hard on a Plane with Snakes. Snakes on a Plane, which is on theaters. Die Hard but Awful. It's the Die Hard sequel. A Good Day to Die Hard. And the last one, Die Hard in a Building. Is it the
Raid?
I was gonna say the Rock one where he jumps.
When he punches
skyscraper.
The
I was right.
I'm gonna
the Rock where he jumps. I remember what I was gonna say. So Snakes on a Plane. Have we ever talked about the sequel that I was gonna write? Or that I think we were gonna write together, sir?
I remember Sir talking about one.
Instead of Snakes on a Plane Soap, it was Boas. Bears on a Submarine.
I remember Gorilla Apartment.
Oh, all right.
That was the other one.
I think we Bears I think we had was the main I think this now. Was like the
Yeah, we had a couple of series.
The cinematic universe.
Did you say gorillas in an apartment?
No, gorilla apartment.
Gorilla apartment.
I was like, gorillas in an apartment would be like
It'd be really boring because they'd all be very quiet and vegetarian.
I think that'd be terrifying.
Really
that'd be like the art house. Really scary that'd be like the art house version.
It's a suspense film.
Yeah.
Just watching a guy and he's with a, it's got a gorilla in his apartment. What's going to happen?
How did they come to be roommates? Which one of them had the least first?
Who says the roommates?
But yeah, I remember I wrote like maybe... I wrote maybe 10 pages of Bears on a Submarine, and it was about how Navy scientists were doing experiments on bears to make them like... It was what I understand the plot of Day of the Dolphin to sort of be.
It's the same plot.
Do they talk only in one syllable words?
Okay, no, they didn't talk. They were just like trained to kill.
The gorilla's been quarantined.
Where's my pen?
The only thing I remember from my script was that the protagonist's name was Bunk McPunchy or something like that.
I get it. The gorilla's on quarantine. That's why it's stuck in the apartment.
Okay. Mm.
See, I thought it was the gorilla's apartment first. He broke up with his old lady. He needed to get a new roommate. But the human is the messy one.
This sounds like the
Odd Couple.
Exactly.
The wolf among us. like the gorilla is like a civilized mm-hmm. person.
Gorillas in our midst? Mm. That's a Bob's Burgers joke. I can't claim credit for that one. All right. Whatever.
It's that time again.
Are there still people around? Are people even listening to this? Is there still society?
They're still listening. They're just listening.
Well, hopefully our numbers will go up because people will be stuck inside.
Oh, yeah. If you're quarantined, let us know. Let us know what you thought about La Jete. And let us know what you thought about Training Day. Starring Ethan Hawke and...
Tom Berenger.
Tom Berenger.
Academy Award winner Denzel, two-time Academy Award winner Denzel Washington, directed by
Antoine Fuqua. Try to pronounce it.
Isn't it Fuqua? Mm-hmm.
I think so.
And written by David Ayer.
David Ayer, that's right.
Ayer or Ayers?
Ayer.
David Ayer.
Well, I like to throw in a little
who
S
who has
there.
A credit at the end of it as one of the stuntmen. Isn't that weird?
That is weird.
Maybe he just really wanted to be in a scene. Like, yeah, exactly. Hey, can I be a guy that falls out of a window?
Maybe it's the person just ran in a scene because yeah. Some people need stunt people to run.
Anyways, I've been Nick.
I've been Sir.
Eva.
And Kyle.
And...
Amatro.
I didn't know you liked to get wet. isn't that the line?
Oh, you like to get wet. Sherm. PCP.